And good day, ladies and gentlemen. Statements in this conference call that are not historical fact are forward-looking statements. Without limiting the generality of the foregoing words such as anticipate, believe, budget, contemplate, continue, could, envision, estimate, protect, expect, guidance, intend, may, might, plan, possibly, potential, predict, probably, pro forma, project, seek, should, target, or will, or the negative thereof, or other variations thereon, or similar words or phrases and comparable terminology are intended to identify forward-looking statements. The matters discussed on this call that are forward-looking statements are based on current management expectations involving risks and uncertainties that may result in these expectations not being realized. Actual events, outcomes, and results may differ materially from what is expressed or forecasted in forward-going statements made on this call due to numerous risks and uncertainties, including, but not limited to, the risks and uncertainties described in this conference call. Our press release issued yesterday and other filings made by the company with the SEC from time to time. Forward-looking statements made during this conference call speak only as of the date on which they are made, and Federated National Holding Company specifically claims any obligation to update or revise any forward-looking statement to reflect new information, future events, or circumstances, or otherwise. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If you require assistance during the call, please press star then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this conference may be recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to our host of today's call, Mr. Michael Braun, CEO and President. You may begin.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us today to discuss Federated National Holding Company's third quarter 2016 financial results. I'm joined on the call by Eric Fernandez, our interim chief financial officer. Our financial results can be found in our earnings press release. We'll go over some brief highlights, and then we'll open up the line for questions. Q3 2016 highlights as measured against the same three-month period last year, except where noted, 24.1% increase in gross written premiums to $161.1 million, 17.1% increase in Florida homeowners policies to approximately 271,000, 15.4% increase in total revenue to $83.8 million, 5.2% increase in book value per share, excluding non-controlling interest, to $17.72, as compared with $16.85 at December 31, 2015, net income of approximately $1.4 million. $4 million of claims, net of our quota share, reinsurance from the impact of Hurricane Hermine, which impacted the state of Florida. $6.8 million increase in our total loss reserves during the quarter, which increases our total loss reserves at September 30, 2016, to $127.5 million. Our third quarter results continue to demonstrate solid organic growth in both written premiums and policy count, which included the 5.6% Federated National Insurance Company Florida homeowners rate increase effective August 1st. The third quarter losses included $4 million in claims net of our quota share reinsurance as a result of the impact from Hurricane Hermine, and also from the continued assignment of benefits, which is inflating the costs associated with our everyday claims on our homeowners book of business in the state. Our continued organic growth and high retention rate are a testament to the trust that our partner agents have in our company in a competitive Florida property insurance market. Our partner agents have placed $38.3 million in new Florida homeowners premium, $4.7 million in new non-Florida homeowners premium, and $24.6 million in premium in other lines of business, with which our renewed business during the quarter totals $161.1 million in total gross written premiums. We continue to focus on delivering the best possible customer service experience to our policyholders, many of which have been impacted by Hurricane Hermine and Hurricane Matthew in the state of Florida and in the state of South Carolina. With that, we are glad to open up the call to your questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you have any questions, please press star then one on your touchtone telephone. Again, for any questions or comments, please press star then one. And our first question comes from Arash Soleimani at KBW. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, Ross.
I guess just to start, so the expense ratio was much, much higher than what I was looking for. Can you maybe just dig into what's driving that?
Sure. I'll start with the overview. Eric may dive deeper. But really, when you look at the company as a whole, what's the primary business that we write is Florida homeowners. And Florida homeowners, if you look at that in 2016, you have two big issues. One is the reserves, which we've upped from year-end by $30 million, as well as storms, which include Matthew in Q4, is going to be about $30 million. So those are two huge numbers. To your question on auto, we absolutely do write auto. We've maintained the statement that as we build out that program in 2016, not to anticipate to see much profit on that program because we have to build out the infrastructure. With that, we have a team of 35 people now, and we'll probably write between $50 and $60 million this year. However, it's a high-seeded program of approximately 85%. Those expenses that come in through the income statement and go out through the income statement are impacted by that quota share. And the expense ratio, which this auto business runs at a higher expense ratio. So once again, Eric can go deeper on that. The auto program really isn't going to contribute in a positive way or a negative way to our earnings in 2016, though we anticipate it will in a favorable way in 2017 and beyond. But it's causing definitely some changes on the income statement, primarily as a result to expenses.
Yeah, hey, Arash, this is Eric. Yeah, just to add to what Mike said, in terms of the percentage and why it's so high, right? So there's a couple things that are factored in there. One is the fact that we have a new reinsurance contract that added $10 million of ceded premiums in the quarter. Again, that would impact the ratio. The second part of this, and we talked about this before, and to Mike's point about auto, when you look at the expense ratio, you got to add in the other income, which a lot of that growth that you're seeing from a year ago is offsetting some of that commission expense cost that you're seeing in the expense ratio. And then the last thing, and I don't want to go into kind of the inner workings of the quota share accounting, right, but we did have an additional $9 million of ceded premiums in the quarter related to the change in the experience account in the 30% quota share, which again, $9 million, and kind of add those all those things together, you get back to a expense ratio kind of sort of in line with historical quarters.
On the 30% program, is that part of what you were mentioning before with the change in the experience account?
Yeah, let me add to that, right? So what you're seeing, if we just look at Q3 16 and specifically the 30% quota share, there's two things that impacted the results. Both are washes, but I want to illustrate it because it does impact the ratios and it does impact the absolute dollars, right? So as I mentioned, there's $9 million increase to ceded premiums related to the change in the experience account. And then the offset to that is sitting in losses in LAE that gets kind of lost with all the noise and the CAS, et cetera, right? But there's a benefit there of $9 million related to the ceded losses on the claims paid, okay? Because back to the 8K and what we're doing when we unwound the 30% quota share, we continue to cede those losses. So that's kind of how it's flowing through our P&L. Again, the net impact of that is a wash; it's zero, but it does impact some of these ratios that you're referring to.
Okay. So I guess to ask maybe a bit differently, is the expense ratio, is it, I guess, artificially inflated this quarter? So I guess looking at 4Q16 or 1Q17, looking forward the next couple of quarters, would it get back to kind of that, you know, mid-30 to 40% range, or, you know what I mean? Is this kind of just an unusual one-time?
I mean, To your point, yes, it's going to decline over time. One, as the homeowners' premiums increase, right? And then as we cede less losses related to the 30% quota share over time, that'll continue to go down. In terms of absolute dollar, right, and kind of putting aside the actual ratio, if you look at absolute dollar, that is a good run rate. And again, obviously, you know, as we grow premiums, the expense will continue to grow, again, from an absolute dollar perspective.
And Arash, just for me to add in, our business remains the same in the sense of maintaining expense control. That's paramount to what we do. That doesn't change. But once again, unfortunately, the ratios in the income statement is really kind of there's so much noise, as Eric is saying, because of a lot of moving pieces to it. But we haven't lost discipline of our expense control by any stretch of the matter. So there's no change in our infrastructure other than the balance of really the business that we're writing, the auto primarily.
So when you say the dollar amount stays the same, are you referring to the $34.5 million in commission and other underwriting expense?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Correct. And let me just add to that, right? So if you look at a year ago, if you look at commissions and other underwriting, it was $21 million. This quarter is 34, right? That's a pretty sizable jump. Kind of to add to what I said earlier, a lot of that is premium growth, both for homeowners and auto. But in addition to that is the fact that we're no longer getting commission credit on the 30% ceded premiums. Right, so that makes up most of that.
Hey, Arash, with that, we always appreciate all your questions. We've got a bit of a queue here. Please, let's circle back to you if we could for some more of your questions, if you have some more.
Sure.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from Samir Kher of Capital Returns. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, Samir.
Morning. I had said some questions on your excess capital position. How much excess capital do you guys feel you have at this point, and how soon after the quarter can you start buying back shares?
Well, define excess capital. The board evaluates where we're at on a regular basis. We have a committee that determines, you know, what we're going to be doing in terms of the buyback. Generally speaking, we are not in the market, 2 weeks before the end of the quarter and until after we report. So in terms of capital in the holding company, I don't know if you've got a number on that, Eric, but I believe it to be around $65 million. There's plenty of capital there. The definition of excessive capital we'll evaluate at the board level.
Okay. And then just kind of stepping back, looking at the business model, can you just help me understand on a gross and net basis what you expect the loss ratio and the expense ratio to be for homeowners and auto when absent cats, absent some funny accounting with quota shares and everything? What are the expectations for loss ratio and expense ratio?
Well, let me start with that one before I can dig deeper into that. We've typically had homeowners at about 29.5, and now it's in 36 and change. That's a big movement. That's primarily the result of assignment of benefits. And then on top of that, we had a lot of weather. There's no reason to believe that we can't get that back down to that historical level. And unfortunately, the policyholder is going to have to bear some of that, if not most of it, because of additional rate. So we do have new rate that came into the program in August, which has had very minimal benefit in Q3. It will have a continued benefit in Q4, obviously 1 and 2 much better. But next year at Q3, it'll be fully earned in. So I think from a homeowner's perspective, we should go back to historical terms. Generally, in terms of auto, you're looking at, you know, mid to lower 60s. But obviously, we're writing that through independent agents as well as with general agents. So there is some high commission expense associated with that.
Yeah, the only thing I'll add, right, so from a net loss ratio, it's obviously spiked the last couple quarters related to cats and some development. When you back those out, you kind of get to a, I'll call it 55-56%, which is not where we want to be, but given the AOB environment, that's where we are at the moment. And obviously, as we earn out the 5.6% rate increase that went in August 1st, that'll come down some.
And to reiterate, Samir, the two items, if you're including Matthew in Q4, you're talking about $30 million of weather. And if you look at our balance sheet through Q3, we've got an extra $30 million of reserves.
Okay, and just on that, actually, will Matthew prompt a capital contribution to the insurance sub from the Holdco?
Currently, we believe we'll be downstreaming some capital into the insurance company. We have not made a final decision how much it would be. That's driven by RBC, among other factors. We may downstream, you know, maybe $10 million at year end. It could be more, it could be less. But we'll determine that at year end. So obviously, the earnings within the holding company, or I should say the MGA, or company's MGA, is definitely more positive these days than the underwriting profit. But there's more capital, obviously, in the non-statutory entity than the statutory.
All right. Thanks. I'll repeat. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you, Samir.
And our next question comes from Ryan Barnes of Janney. Your line is open.
Hi. Yeah. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Ryan.
Hi. Thanks, guys. So if I kind of back out reserve releases and catastrophes for the year, I have on an underwriting basis, I have you guys, you know, modestly losing money. So my question is, is the strategy to continue to grow here if you're losing money on an underlying basis on underwriting right now, or should we, you know, push rate in order to get some improved metrics here? That's what I'm just trying to figure out.
Well,
what the...
you know, it's a trick question. You say, do we want to continue to grow if we're losing money? So there's two pieces to that. I believe our business model is sustainable, which is providing exceptional service to our policyholders. Once again, the two things that have impacted those $30 million in weather this year, I think is pretty unusual. We haven't had those type of weather losses in a decade. In terms of AOB, it's going to get priced into the policy. So when you have a movement of attritional losses, you have to experience them before you can get them in rate. So unfortunately, it's a significant movement in a short amount of time. I would say it's a massive amount of movement in this short amount of time. So therefore, unfortunately, we are incurring that expense. We are, you know, most of these reserves are going to bulk reserves for future claims based on a spike that we saw in 2015. So I think we're being very prudent in what we're doing. We reevaluate our reserves on a quarterly basis. But I believe we are still competitive in the marketplace. And with our rate increase, most of this underwriting profit should be resolved. So hopefully that answers your question.
So the 5.6% rate increase, you're not looking for any more than that right at this time. You're not going to try to push that further. That's going to be what we're going with. That's what I'm trying
to say. Right now the 5.6 is coming rolling in since August 1. I believe rates will go up in 2017. I do. I can't tell you how much, but I do not anticipate the assignment of benefits being fixed at the legislative level. We're seeing assignment of benefits in the entire state of Florida. We're seeing it on high-end homes. We're seeing it on low-end homes. We're seeing it everywhere. So I think we're being very proactive by bumping our reserves, bumping our anticipated loss ratio, and writing business that we believe to be sustainable and taking the corrective action. It's just 2016 is a disappointing year so far, obviously, for two reasons, the storms and as we're bumping these reserves, that does result in more rate, but it clearly goes through the income statement, and it's causing, it's an unimpressive quarter.
Okay, great. And then my last one, I'll move to the back of the queue. More of a statement than anything else, but it would be easier for us to kind of analyze the homeowners versus the auto if they were in two separate segments. I think it's kind of, you know, throwing off some of the ratios between the businesses by having some of the auto business running through the other income line. That's just more of a statement than a question, but I guess it would make it easier on, I think, everyone if you were able to kind of segment those two separately.
You know, Ryan, we need to step that up. We need to have more. I believe Eric's going to have more in the queue than what you see in the press release. I know it's creating a problem for people to model losses. I understand that. We will improve the process.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from Doug Ruth of Lenox Financial Services. Your line is open.
Okay. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Doug.
Good morning.
Could you tell me what the market share is now?
I don't have a specific number for you, Doug, but generally we've said it's about a $10 billion industry. So Florida, we're still at about 5%. We're still seeing some growth in the market. But I can tell you the growth is there. It's steady, but it's slightly less than the growth that we had a year or two ago just because of being soft. So I would say we're still at about approximately 5%.
Okay. And how much insurance was sold by Monarch and how much insurance was sold by GEICO in the quarter? If there's any commentary to go along with that would be helpful.
Well, so GEICO's within Federated National, and we're still averaging approximately $200,000 a week. That really hasn't moved. And Monarch is about $400,000 a week. That really hasn't moved. It's actually ticken up a bit. You know, some weeks we're selling over $500,000. Once again, the market is fairly soft, so I don't anticipate growth in either one of those in a significant way, but they're fairly steady. And Federated National is about $2 million a week.
And is there any commentary from GEICO or any new developments with Monarch?
Sure. No, nothing new to report. So I think that our independent agents are a great partnership. Our Allstate is our biggest partner by far. GEICO is a fantastic partner. They've been new with us for less than a year. And Monarch, I'll tell you, the rates are a little high, and we're not moving them. So I believe the market will come to us on Monarch. As we get more information, we may modify that statement, but our intention is to be disciplined with what we're writing. It's a challenging market because the expenses have gone up, meaning the attritional loss ratio, as well as it's a soft market where there's a lot of motivated people to write business.
Okay. And generally, the relationship with Allstate continues to be positive.
They're fantastic. Absolutely. I think they're a great partner. We appreciate the corporate structure that they have, the MGA that they have, and I think their captive agents, our high-quality agents, just like our independent agents. We're very happy.
Okay. And then with the Citizens, they made the statement about how they were going to try to change AOB with some of their contract language. Is there any indications that that's working at all?
Well, we have similar language on that, Doug. So that went into effect in Q3 in September. I think that will help. But it's not the cure-all. Assignment of benefits is everywhere. Now you're hearing some of the horror stories where people are signing these contracts. A gentleman was just arrested who got close to $1 million and didn't make any of the repairs. So hopefully the homeowners are becoming more informed. We're doing our best to inform them. Citizens is. I know the agents are. I know our competitors are. To say, why would you assign, why would you give away your contract, why would you give away your coverage, your relationship with your carrier? I think that the growth of AOB that we saw in the latter half of 15 that we're reserving for in 16, I don't know that it's growing necessarily at the clip that it was. I think the growth is less significant, but it's evolved, I'll put it that way, and I think we're managing it well, but we're here for our policyholders, and we believe our service is second to none, and that's what will be our long-term success.
Okay. Are you continuing to add additional employees?
Yeah, the last number I have is we're at about 365. The primary growth that we have is claims-related, obviously, just because you get less economies of scale, obviously underwriting and the other HR, IT, accounting, finance, exec, those things all garner more economies of scale with growth. But what we really want to differentiate ourselves in the market by making sure that we're maintaining quality claims staff. So that's where we're seeing the growth.
Okay. And do you have any indication you thought that the rates might go higher in 2017? Can you give us a little bit more as far as what percent you think they might have to change?
You know, I don't have a number for you. We're conducting that review. We have an internal actuary. We use the resources of an outside actuary. Currently, the math obviously supports a rate increase. It's our intention to file that sometime, in Q1 and have that hopefully approved at that time. But it would become effective, most likely, as our intention is August 1, as the other one's expiring. So we don't want to be too disruptive with our book of business, and force business away. I would assume ultimately, I don't know what's going to get approved, but I would anticipate that it could be mid to high single digits that would ultimately get approved by the department, but I absolutely can't speak on their behalf. And there's a lot of work to be done, before we get there, but that's the indication may be higher than that, but there's a variety of things that we consider when we want to go to market with new rates.
Okay, and then my final question is, now the stock is trading at a discount to the book value. Is there any kind of commentary about increasing the stock buyback?
That's a great question, and as you know, Doug, we've got three members of the board that are on that buyback committee, and that's topic number one. So we're reevaluating that, and there's still dry powder on the current one, I believe, of close to $5 million. We're reevaluating that, and as needed, we can increase that as quick as we need to if we exhaust the current $5 million.
Okay, I just want to make a final comment. I think you folks have done a very good job under very difficult circumstances. None of us really expected $30 million worth of weather or $30 million worth of AOB claims. And I'm grateful for the effort of the people at Federated and what you're trying to do for us.
Thank you for answering
my question.
Thank you. You have a great day.
And our next question comes from David Spear of Nutor. Your line's open.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
Good morning, David.
So you mentioned that you're expecting auto to be a contributor in 2017. I'm just curious in terms of you guys look at a hurdle rate in terms of, policy count, that premium written there, as to, when you start to, when that business starts to contribute to the bottom line.
Well, just to refresh, so it's primarily written through what's called general agents. So they've got the overhead of the distribution, and they go ahead and they work through independent agents. So there's a lot of expense on that side, and unfortunately, as what's well documented yet again in this quarter, that does flow through the income statement. Primarily, the team that we built out is claims related. I believe we've got the team. It's just a matter of garnering the systems and better and making sure we can do so in a more profitable manner. So I've indicated, let's assume in 2016 the program runs at 100 combined. That's not our goal, but let's just make that assumption. Most of it's seeded, so there's not going to really be a big underwriting gain. But I think the opportunity includes the fee income side. So we get 10 points for providing the paper as well as for handling the claims. And I think we can do that for less than 10 points. Unfortunately, not in 2016, but 2017, absolutely, we think we can on a go-forward basis as well. So we think we have the machine built. So of the 10 points, perhaps in 2017, maybe there's a point or two that we can make a profit in 2018, and so on. It should improve from there and so on, especially if the book continues to grow.
And the difference in 2017 versus 2016, if you're writing, I think you're close to $50 million, in 2016, what is? I'm just trying to understand what the differentiator in 2017 would be. What is needed to get to $70 million? I'm just trying to understand where.
I think we have the scale. I think we have the scale. So we've got the business. We've pruned back some of our general agent partners. So our intention is to do better than 100 combined. So I'm just making that generic statement. Our intention is to, if we could get a total expense, total everything of 90, low 90s, high 80s,
that's the goal. If we can make sure that our expense ratio against the 10 points, if we could get it down, you know, and have 2, 3, 4, 5 of those points being a profit, that'd be fantastic. That's going to take some time. It's not happening in 16. I think we're going to make some good progress on that in 17. And by 18, I think it's going to be, I think it's going to contribute to the income statement in a meaningful way.
Got it. And what's your retention running at in terms of regards to policies right now?
Yeah, homeowners, we've generally run at 90%. It bounces up a point or two and periodically, but trailing, we typically, the renewals run at about 90%.
Got it. And then in terms of it was mentioned, I think you mentioned earlier, you have around $65 million, in holdco cash. I know Doug just mentioned earlier about the buyback, but I mean, it would seem especially, I mean, I think your stock's now trading at around 16. It would seem especially at these levels, based on the belief that, that you guys are going to really start seeing some benefits of this growth, it would seem that, being a meaningful buyer here would be, pretty accretive longer term. So I hope that would be the case. Because
David, I hear you loud and clear on that, and we as the committee will discuss it. I'm on the committee with two other board members, and we will absolutely discuss that. We do tend to get blocked frequently. There's a lot of restrictions with a buyback, but I hear you loud and clear, and I hear that from a lot of shareholders, so I hear you.
That's appreciated, because the point I would make is that it only really becomes accretive once that share count really starts meaningfully going lower. And then so when that does happen, that'll be, I think there'll be some real benefits to this company from seeing that.
Yeah, I thank you for saying that, yes.
All right, I really appreciate it. All the best, guys.
Thank you, David.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question at this time, please press star then one on your touchtone telephone. Again, please press star then one for any questions. We do have an additional comment or question from Samir Kher of Capital Returns. Your line is open.
Hi, when are you guys expecting the 10-Q to come out?
I'd say early next week.
Okay. Just to reiterate Ryan's point, I think you need to get that out coincident with the press release since there seems to be so much needed detail in there. So I'd encourage you to do that in future periods.
You're talking about what, breaking down the auto and the homeowners?
Well, I mean, you guys in the press release keep referring to the, note 2 in the 10-Q for detail that, we are all kind of after. So, I mean,
yeah.
I think it would be prudent to get that out with the press release. And then just on the buyback, you guys don't have a 10b5 plan or anything like that, do you?
We do not, correct.
Okay, why is that? I think it'd be a great use of, this would be like the perfect time to have that type of program.
Good point, and yet again, we'll discuss that at the committee. So, yes, thank you.
Okay. And then the 36.1% gross loss ratio in homeowners, that's what you guys will be picking kind of going forward in the next quarter or two, I suppose. how quick should we think about that coming down in 2017 with the benefit of the rate increase?
Well, so you're correct. That's where we're currently at, and we reevaluate that on an ongoing basis. It could go up. It could go down. But absolutely – it can't stay that high. It needs to come down, whether it's through rate, whatever it may be. So in a flat world, I believe it would come back down by the time all the earnings are earning correctly with the increased rate next August. But there's a lot more in that math than just that statement. So I think that 5.6% rate increase, of which we're keeping 80% of that, because really there's no other expense other than some commissions, That will make a significant impact on that. But the question becomes, what happens with our attritional losses? Do they trend up, trend down, or stay the same? I think the rate will significantly help that process.
Okay. And just kind of building on my last set of questions and then the last person who asked questions, what should the expense ratio be on a gross and net basis on the auto business to be profitable and offset the
what we'll do is that's more language. You're kind of coming in and out. That's more language that we'll put in the queue for you as well. But it's clearly a different business model.
Okay. And this is on AOB. Have you guys seen any instances of AOB claims on policies that have the new language? And if so, is it helping with severity?
Well, you know, unfortunately, it just went into effect in September. So here it is, you know, six weeks later. That means, you know, the probability of a claim being in that first 6 weeks with the new effective date and then having a claim, you know, one of the policies renewing and then having a claim is small. I'm not aware of it specifically. Statistically, I would call it remote at this point. But every day going forward, it's going to be more and more, you know, likely. And by next September, you know, 100% of the claims should be reported with the correct, with that new language.
Okay. And then Q4 to date, are you guys seeing a pickup of AOB since last quarter?
You know, Q3 was funny because, you know, two of the 3 months were great months. And, you know, and then September really kind of turned out to be an odd month for us. So, you know, it's hard to say. It's still early. You know, we just continue to evaluate it. You know, it's not going away.
Okay. And then how about with claims from Hurricane Hermine or Matthew? Are you guys seeing an increase of AOB?
Not necessarily. Those guys are out there. Those actors are out there absolutely in the field, you know, trying to get on these claims, and they're going to reopen claims. Absolutely. The claims, are, you know, they're very good at reopening claims and creating, opening new claims many months out. We see that on the attritional losses. I'm sure we'll see it within Hermine and within Matthew as well. These guys are, they're out there. There's a lot of them.
Okay. And then since AOB is so pervasive, and besides rate and just education of the policyholder, are you guys doing anything else on the claims front to try to address it?
Well, we're trying we're trying to keep our agent informed, trying to keep our insured informed. We're trying to settle the claims yet ever quicker, but we also have a very serious fiduciary responsibility to the insured that we investigate the claim thoroughly. So that can take a little bit of time and not just close it as quick as possible. There's a whole process we have to do. So, you know, we're well aware of a lot of these AOB-type vendors, you know, that are out there. And, you know, you kind of develop a relationship with them. New ones continue to pop up. But there's a lot of things that we're doing to manage it on the claim side. But once again, when you insert people into a claim, even when you close it and they reopen it, when you insert people into a claim, that makes the claim more expensive.
Okay.
We're trying to keep it simple and keep it between us and the policyholder and close it quickly and fairly.
Okay. And just on the claims front, how many claims, open claims do you guys have from before 2016? You have that?
I don't know if you've got that in front of you. I can tell you, you know, like Matthew, we've got about 50% of those claims. There's about 4,000 claims. So from prior years, a typical claim should be closed, you know, let's call it 20 business days. Obviously, you can get some very complicated claims, specifically large losses or on the casualty side of the policy, or you can close a claim and then it can reopen 6 months later or a year or 2 years later, or you can get a claim reported a year or 2 years late. But clearly, the vast majority of what the claims team is working on is 2016. I don't know that we've got that number for you. We'll try to locate that and circle back to you. But the vast majority would be the current year.
Okay. And just on the 4,000 or so Hurricane Matthew claims, was that predominantly all Florida, or is there any other states?
Well, so basically, on the modeled results at the time Matthew impacted the state, the states of Florida and South Carolina for us. Those are where we're right property. We thought it was $75 million and $2 million. We stand by those numbers, but the models have come down. So if you look at air and RMS industry events, you know, it appears that it's a much smaller event than what they thought it could have been, what it was, and then after the fact they brought those numbers down. I believe that it's 75 plus 2 at this time. It may take us an extended period of time to get there, but I think those are fair numbers. You know, but I wouldn't be surprised if Matthew came in much lower. I really wouldn't, but you got to add the AOB effect to it. But I'm certain It's over the $18.45 million retention that we have on our reinsurance program.
Fair enough. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks, Samir.
And I'm showing no further questions at this time. I'd like to turn the call back over to Michael Braun.
Well, we thank everyone for their interest today. If anyone has follow-up questions, I'm always available, as well as Eric. And thank you very much. Have a great day.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference. Thank you for your participation and have a wonderful day.